Hall of Famer Chris Carter. That is Nick Wright. Good morning, guys.
Good morning.
Great show ahead over the course of the next 3 hours. Talk some football. Jerry Jones says he's concerned about the Cowboys. The Saints have found a whole new way to win, but let's start with some basketball. On CC Social Calendar, he was at the Nets-Lakers game, and so that is where we begin this morning. Nets, winners of 5 in a row, hosting LeBron and company. Pick this up in the first quarter. LeBron drives to the rim hard. But second-year center Jared Allen blocks the shot. Get this, guys. Just the 9th dunk attempt in LeBron's 16-year career that has been blocked. Fast forward to the fourth now. Kyle Kuzma hits a 3. Almost a minute later, Lonzo, he hits a 3, and that cuts the Nets' lead to 7. Under 20 seconds to go. LeBron, a 3 of his own, giving him 36 on the night after scoring just 13 on Sunday. 8 seconds left. LeBron misses the 3, and that would be the game. Nets go on to win 115-110, their 6th straight win. Lakers now 1-3 on their current road trip. Here's what LeBron had to say after the game.
Our team is built on depth and energy. And, you know, for the last couple of games, we didn't have our depth. Tonight, we had some energy, but we didn't have our depth. We got to continue to get better. We don't just take the losses and throw them away. You know, not in the wild, wild west, you know, when every game counts. You know, I mean, every game matters. And, you know, we you know, could have had a pretty good road trip, but, you know, going 1-3 is definitely not the way that we would like to have it.
LeBron brought up depth. They will get most of that depth back, hopefully Friday. Maybe not JaVale McGee with the flu, but Ingram and Rondo, hopefully, against New Orleans. CeCe, what was the key to this game?
Well, depth is part of the key. It's hard for any NBA team. We saw Golden State. If they lose one of their starters, one of their all-stars, they have 2 starters out in Ingram and JaVale McGee. Ingram's been out for a long period of time. JaVale McGee just recently missed these last couple games. But their inability to meet, one of the things we talked about the Lakers, what they improved on, was their overall team defense. Like, on this road trip, they're individually defensively, especially with the last 2 games when you don't have JaVale McGee there as a rim protector. You don't have him and Tyson Chandler, because you need both of them. Tyson Chandler is not a starter right now. And JaVale McGee, we saw when he was playing 25 to 30 minutes, he starts to, his overall efficiency goes down the more minutes he gets over 22 minutes. So I think right now they're struggling defensively, individual defensively, especially at the point guard spot. Last night's game was about the type of energy that Brooklyn's got a good ball team. They're well coached. They play a good style where they get up and down. They shoot the ball well. They got a number of shooters on their team. And the Lakers really couldn't hit the 3 ball, especially for the second half, the way they shot it in the first quarter. But an ignited Nets team, a very into it crowd. It was a big time crowd there last night. And right now the Nets are on a 6-game winning streak, the longest in the NBA currently. Yeah. So they're playing their best basketball of the season. Lakers not playing great basketball on this 4-game road trip.
Right now, that's the best place to watch basketball in New York City, is Barclays in Brooklyn rather than
Garden. Both of them are very, very nice to me, so I can't make the distinction between the two.
Right now, given the way the Nets are playing, that to me is the best
environment. Yes.
The Garden's always the Garden, but the Nets have, they are finally going to have their own draft pick next year. They have some quality, no great players on the team, but some quality young players on the team. But what LeBron's talking about when he says depth, and when you bring up JaVale McGee, it's not just not having JaVale, it's who's in there in place of him. They had 10 minutes played at center last night by Zubats and Mo Wagner.
Yes.
Those guys need to be playing 0 minutes, except for in mop-up time. You mentioned they were without 2 starters. At the beginning of the year, Rondo was a starter too, see? So, I mean, now Lonzo's going to be the starter, but because there's no Rondo, he'll be back soon. Ingram, he'll be back soon. JaVale, I think, probably be back Friday as well. But because those 2 backcourt players are not out there, that's how Svi Mykhailiuk and KCP play a combined 43 minutes. Like, KCP needs to be playing about 20 minutes. Svi needs to be playing 0 minutes. And so all of that contributed to it. And the other thing that happened was this. There was one sustained run in this basketball game. The Nets in the third quarter. The Nets went on a 12-0 run in the third quarter. The Lakers, in the first half and in the fourth quarter, the Lakers never went on a similar run of their own. So they're in a position where they're down 187 with 7.5 minutes left. And when you're in that spot, if you're going to execute the comeback, which they almost did, you've got to have all the breaks go your way. And Jared Dudley got an offensive rebound, put back. That hurt you. In the final minute, Jared Dudley and D'Angelo Russell hit contested threes late in the shot clock, the shot the Lakers wanted them to take. And if you're down 13 midway through the fourth, any of those things beat you, all of those things
if
beat
Jared
the Lakers.
If Jared Dudley gets 13 points, you're going to have problems.
10 in the fourth.
I mean, right. So you're going to have problems. They couldn't get a stop late in the game. Individually, the Lakers are just not good defenders. We have seen the team was starting to come together, and collectively they've been a better team defender. But if you look on this road trip and look at Lonzo, Lonzo to me is not a great individual point guard defender. And with all the great point guards we have in the West, he struggled on this road trip. First game in the road trip, they face Houston Rockets. Harden gives him 50. Third game in the road trip, John Wall comes from nowhere and gets 40. And last night, D'Angelo Russell gets some revenge on the Lakers who traded him after drafting him out of Ohio State. He drops 22 and 13 on them. So Lonzo has to get better as an individual ball, single ball defender.
And D'Angelo hit the shot that basically clinched the game. That put him up two scores with less than 30 seconds left. LeBron hit that three in the corner, but that was when the Lakers were down. That was just to cut it to four, I think, not to get them the lead or tie.
Do you look at this road trip and say, okay, they were missing some key components here? I mean, this is a team that trailed by double digits most of the second half and still kept it close at the very end. Can you say once they get all the pieces back, they should be okay, or is there a legitimate concern?
Yeah, listen, you shouldn't lose back-to-back games to Washington and Brooklyn, and they weren't. When I say back-to-back, I mean consecutive, not on back-to-back nights. You don't even have the excuse of being tired. The Washington game was the game on the road trip that has to be the most disappointing. And by the way, that's been a
13-point effort.
The LeBron's 13-point effort where they got blown out. And that's been a theme for the Lakers all year. Sunday games, I don't know what the Lakers are doing on Saturdays. This one, you can't even blame it on that because they were played Saturday night and then traveled. But Sunday games, this Laker team, home or away, has been bad. They've been a bad road team this year overall, below 500, very good at home. But LeBron was right. We had a chance to be 2-2 on the road trip, and you would have taken that. I think they probably went into the game against Brooklyn last night expecting to win. They never got any separation. The Nets got that separation in the third quarter.
Yeah, the Nets played good. They are a good basketball team. They got some good young players. They got some good pieces, and they're not at full strength. But what they're doing right now currently with that six-game winning streak, it brings a lot of energy to that franchise. When you're talking about LeBron James in the building, they're in the last game of a four-game road trip. You know he's going to be going at it hard, and it all started with that block dunk from the beginning. They were able to keep that energy throughout the game, and in the fourth, they say it all the time in the NBA, it's a make or miss league. Nets made their shots. Lakers weren't able to make their shots at the end.
First quarter of the game, the Lakers were 5 of 6 from 3. The rest of the game, they were, I think, 8 of 34 from 3. So that contributed to it. But another thing is this. You mentioned LeBron's 13-point game on Sunday. They're going to lose 100% of the games LeBron plays like that. When LeBron goes 36, 13, and 8, and you're against a team that's not going to make the playoffs out east, you want to win those games. He alluded to it there. He's like, you're in the Wild West. Every game in the standings matter. Now, they didn't drop any games in the standings. They're still in fourth place, but they got a tough stretch coming up. They play the Warriors on Christmas Day. If people want to look really ahead, the month of February is a hellscape for the Lakers schedule-wise. They need to be in a good position headed into right around the trade deadline because that month of February is so tough and the last handful of games of the year are so tough. So this is a game that I don't want to say was squandered because they were never in control of, but I don't think they played their best. Part of its depth. Part of it's that they didn't play that well.
Lakers lose to a pretty good Nets team right now on a six-game win streak of their own. Got to take a break. Coming up, a little Cowboys talk. Is Jerry Jones concerned about his Dallas team? Hear it from him next. This is First Things First. All right, time to talk some Dallas Cowboys. Coming off a shutout loss to the Colts, a loss Ezekiel Elliott said the team actually needed in order for them to regain focus. Now the team's owner, however, slightly less optimistic. Jerry Jones's cup clearly half empty. Here's what he had to say about the team's first shutout loss since 2003.
We are concerned. We should be concerned. Parity is really here in the NFL. There's a lot of competitive teams that have a chance here. And we've got to realize that any team can beat you. They pay their guys, too. when you play them. And they're paid to beat you. And you go out there and give them an opportunity and line it up for them, it can happen to you.
All right, see, is Jerry right? Should they be concerned about the Cowboys right now?
Yeah, of course they should be concerned. Any team coming down the stretch. What you don't want, what the L.A. Rams are, a current two-game losing streak. And now the ceiling is caving in on them. Oh, potentially they were a one seed. Now, will they be the two seed? So, no, a losing streak is not what you want. Jerry is right about that. And they need to make sure that they study up on Tampa Bay, because if you look at the number one seed right now in the NFC, that would be the New Orleans Saints. They lost to Tampa Bay and struggled with Tampa Bay 2 weeks ago. So what Jerry's telling them, these young Cowboys, yes, they are very, very talented. Every team in the league is very, very talented. And these Cowboys, when you're a young football team, when you've been coming through a month of football where they were on a football high and we saw them last week not be able to reach as far as the emotion, not necessarily as sharp on the game planning, yes, I would be concerned. This is a fair warning to the Cowboys. Now, they're playing at home. This is a game where they should be able to establish their running game. Tampa Bay, what they're doing, they should be able to get after the quarterback, Dallas, because their front does not match up with Dallas. So, yes, but Jerry is right. And if you listen to Jerry the last month or so, his talking points have been right on cue as far as what you would want to hear from the leaders of the team and or the head coach. Now, we know Jerry, he's the Dallas quarterback, and he's the Dallas coach, and he's the spokesperson, and he also, I damn own the team, too. Yes, so I like his message points. They've been fairly consistent with what you'd like to hear either coming from the head coach or the leaders of the team.
I don't know how you could not be concerned if you're the owner of the Dallas Cowboys. When you look at the NFC playoff picture, is pretty well settled. There's a chance Philly and the fighting Nick Foles are going to jump over Minnesota, but in all likelihood, we know who the six teams are. Saints, Bears, Rams, Seahawks, Vikings, Cowboys. So, it's the only question is, will the Vikings stay in that six line? But if it is those six teams, we know the Cowboys go into the playoffs with the worst passing game, with the most unsettled quarterback situation. It's settled and we know who it is, but it's not settled as far as faith in the ability. The only one that's close to it would be the Bears and Mitch Trubisky, but Mitch Trubisky has had more high-level games this year than Dak. We also know that if you like me and you care about the point differential number, there's three teams in the NFC that have been elite point differential as far as how much they've scored, how much their opponents have scored. Those are, which shouldn't surprise you, Saints, Rams, Bears, all plus 100 or more. The Seahawks are at plus 71, and then there's the Vikings at plus 14 and Dallas at plus 7. So, they're just barely,
right.
For some context, that's the same point differential as the Denver Broncos. It's a worse point differential than the Tennessee Titans. That speaks to, for the Cowboys to win games, it's not usually in overwhelming, dominant fashion. So, of course, they should be concerned. They go into these playoffs with one glaring weakness as far as their passing game that the other NFC playoff teams don't have.
One of the other things that Jerry Jones did talk about was his concern for where this team is in the red zone, that they seem to have these squandered opportunities. But how do you get a team at this point in the season better in the red zone when your quarterback is who it is, mm-hmm. and your personnel is who it is? They're somehow not finding a way to score.
Yeah, red zone offense is hard to improve. The reason why, just the obvious, there's less area for them to defend. So there is no deep passing game. Everything is either short or intermediate. Now, they're going to have more defenders. You don't want to turn the ball over in the red zone. So coordinators and quarterbacks are more careful with the football because if they're in the red zone, they're pretty much guaranteed 3 points. So we want to be able to guarantee yourself that without taking. So you have to do that by formation-wise, and also you have to do that by down in distance. You have to be able to get them in down in distance, and on first down, it's a great down to throw in the red zone. And second down, only if it's second and short. If it's second and long, you're going to get 7-8 defenders out there to the quarterback. It's going to be really hard to find a space for him to throw. So from a creative standpoint, come up with some new formations that they haven't seen, things that you've used potentially in the field where you can dictate What type of coverage? For instance, if I play a slot, I know they can only play a couple coverages, all right? They can play cover two, cover three, cover one. If they walk the linebacker out on me, I know they're playing zone. So there's some things that you can dictate, and they become predictable. So now the quarterback can anticipate better. And they don't have a 50-50 jump ball wide receiver, so that's not an option for them. So they have to try to run some crossing routes, and it's really hard to run the ball down there because you got less space, and there's really nowhere for the running back to be able to go. It's easier to run in the field. It's easier to be able to throw in the field than it is in the red zone because of the constriction.
Jerry's absolutely right to be concerned about the red zone. The Cowboys have the second worst red zone offense in all of football this year. Now, I think that is tied to another thing they are second worst in this year, which is number of sacks given up. Dak's the second most sacked quarterback this year. When I've been watching the Cowboys, a lot of red zone drives have stalled because when they do call a passing play, Dak ends up getting sacked. Now you're in third and goal from the 17, and it's basically a give-up play, so you can end up just kicking the field goal. They've got to figure out what's going on with their pass protection. Deshaun Watson's the most sacked quarterback in football. That makes sense. He tries to extend plays, and they have a terrible offensive line. Derek Carr's the third most sacked quarterback. That makes sense. Dak being the second most sacked quarterback in football doesn't make sense given the Cowboys' offensive line personnel and the threat of the running game.
I think maybe after this year, we're going to get away from the Dallas Cowboys being the best offensive line. Like 3 years ago, yes, they were. When they were rookies and everything, they absolutely were. But if you look at the injuries, if you look at the absence of Travis Frederick, you look at last week, Zach Martin. I mean, I don't believe this is a top five offensive line, which has led to the quarterback being under duress more. And Dak is trying to protect, doesn't want to throw interceptions, so he's holding on to the ball, eating it, and taking some of those
sacks. Well, I want to ask you about that because I agree. They have not played like a top five offensive line.
I mean, no top five offensive line coach gets fired.
100%. But they also, I don't think, and I don't think you think, are a bottom five offensive line. So there is somewhere in the middle as far as why Dak is sacked. It's not he's middle of the pack being sacked. He's been sacked the second most of any quarterback in football. Is more of that on the quarterback than I'm giving it credit for?
It's a combination of their protections, the quarterback. Dak holds on to the ball a long time. Why? Because he does not have great anticipation. He's afraid to throw interceptions. It's not a skill set that he has mastered yet. So that part right there is on the quarterback. But that offensive line has been inconsistent throughout the season.
All right, let's take a break. Mark Schlereth is going to join us on the other side, talk some Steelers next.
Let him talk all
first. Three-time Super Bowl champ Mark Schlereth is here with us. Hey, Stink, good morning.
How are you? Good morning.
I am
good.
Great.
To be with you guys. Yeah.
Wednesday.
Oh, all day.
Tremendous
Christmas card, man.
Thank you, brother.
You really have a lovely family.
Well, thank the missus.
The missus, yes. You can thank the missus for producing the beautiful children.
Yes, that's a great way. And from that, we will transition right to the Steelers somehow. On Sunday, the Steelers picked up a season-saving win against the Patriots, a team that has dominated them in recent years. How do you define dominated? Well, before Sunday, the Steelers had lost five straight to the Pats by a combined 64 points. All that changed Sunday with Pittsburgh's win. However, Big Ben Roethlisberger is trying to keep things in perspective, not get too carried away with the result. Here's what he had to say about beating New England.
Well, anytime a team beats you way more than you beat them, you definitely want to go get them. So, yeah, it means something. I mean, they're kind of the team of that everyone wants to beat all the time. So when you beat them, it makes you feel a little more special. But winning at home in this time of year, you just want to get a win against anybody.
All right, Stink, I get that, and yes, that's true, but how important was this win over the Patriots to the Steelers and what this could do for them, propel them at this point in the season?
Well, one, it's a huge victory. This time of year, everybody's beat up, and they only have a half-game lead over Baltimore. Mm-hmm. So they've got two games left. They have to go to New Orleans. This was a huge win. The other thing is, it's one of those situations where not only have the New England Patriots, you know, we were talking about my family Christmas cards. Yes. New England Patriots have been the daddy, right, of the Pittsburgh Steelers. You're talking about family Christmas cards. Mm-hmm. So it basically covers that over. You know, all of a sudden you have the confidence that we can compete with these guys. The other thing is, you change some things up. You found a way to bracket the inside receivers in both Gronkowski and Edelman, especially late in that football game. You took them out. You said, we'll play some man on the edge, and we're just going to make sure our guys can hold up. We're going to give them that opportunity. We're going to rush the passer in doing that. We're going to bring pressure. So they changed up kind of what they've done. The other thing about the Steelers here in recent, and just in recent weeks, they are so talented on the outside that they oftentimes just say, you know what, we're not going to run it. We choose not to run it. And they were consistent last week against the Patriots. They did. They had a couple of wrinkles with that pitch counter, which I hadn't seen before. So they ran a counter play off of a pitch look. So they pitched it out, stab, let everybody clear, and then go back against the grain. So they did a phenomenal job with that, changing some things up. And they rushed it, 158 yards? So they changed kind of their personality when taking on the New England Patriots. They almost went out and New England. And that, to me, is a big psychological factor for them going down the stretch. So it was a huge win for them.
Before I get to what the impact it had on their season, I want to follow up on something you said, because you weren't here Monday. But Monday, Chris made the exact same observation about that specific play, about the toss play that they
ran a counter.
That, and how unique it was. Why was it so? It stuck out to you watching the game, stuck out to you separately. Right. Why was it so effective?
Well, one, once you toss the ball, dudes are flying. They're running. I mean, they are running.
There's only one play.
Right.
They're trying not to get the edge.
Right.
Belichick team, oh, man, it's so hard to run around them. But their concept, there's only one play. And there's no receiver coming back the other way to run some type of reverse. So they're making sure they're trying to get as many bodies to that edge as possible.
Right. And then what it ends up doing for you as an offensive lineman is once you take, as a linebacker, you take that hard step or you take a couple of steps that way, it automatically creates an angle for me. Because as I go down, I walk up to the second level, you're blocked. You've blocked yourself off the action. So when you look at shotgun runs, okay, as an offense, the issue with shotgun runs is you take about 40% of your playbook in the running game and you scrap pile it.
Right, because it's not the same reads and everything for the defense.
Right, and so when you start running out of shotgun, there just aren't as many plays that you can actually execute. So they've created a way to run counter out of shotgun. And again, like I said, I hadn't seen it before. Like, one of the things I love about sitting in my room at the hotel and watching film is every week I can get through. I went through 6 hours of film last night, and you will find something
that you haven't seen
or something that's just tremendous. You're like, oh, my God, you see how they got to, you know, whatever that play is, or you see how they ran that route combination, or you see what the defense did to try to stop that. Those are the things you love about this game. And they created a play for themselves that New England throughout the entirety of that game, even late in that game, when they had to have a stop, where they were struggling stopping that play.
And confidence-wise, when you beat a team that has a world championship pedigree, someone like Tom Brady, someone, a team, an organization that you struggle with, and you're struggling, it's going to give you a tremendous amount of confidence. Sometime you can add just a little wrinkle and everything, which Pittsburgh was able to do with the toss counter. But, man, coming down the stretch, you need to have confidence that you can win games. And the reason how you get confidence is by winning games.
Right.
Winning closely contested games against very, very good teams. Now, the Browns are a much improved team. But if Ben Roethlisberger, because Ben always got a little bit of untruth often in everything that he says. Well, son, if they beat Cleveland at home in December, it's not as big. Now, Cleveland hopes to get in some of those big games, but beating New England, a team that has been your daddy on the
absolutely.
Christmas card for a long time. I mean, that right there, I believe, is significant, and this franchise was really struggling, Nick.
Listen, the win was critical because if they lost this week, they're in eighth place in the AFC with two games left, headed to New Orleans. Like you mentioned, they were a half game up on Baltimore. They're still a half game up on Baltimore because Baltimore won again. So I don't want to say it saved their season. It kept their season alive, but their season ain't saved yet. They go in and lose this week. Let's see what Baltimore does, what Indy does, what Tennessee does, because they could be in eighth place once again. So their season got not a pardon, but a stay of execution, if you will. They have to keep winning football games because Indy and Tennessee are right there.
And let me tell you something now. I mean, Indy and Tennessee playing really well. Indy, you know, what they're doing offensively, the way they're running the ball. Tennessee, great defense. Nobody wants to play Baltimore. I'm going to tell you right now that Pittsburgh has a vested interest in keeping Baltimore out of the playoffs because the offense that they're running right now, that 1972 SEC caliber offense, I'm telling you what, nobody knows how to defend that. And they've got a historically good defense, and it would be one of the best defenses in history or recent history if they could just turn people over. Right. They're top five in every category.
But they're bottom five in turnovers forced. It's so bizarre.
Yeah.
The other wrinkle in all this is James Conner. How much do they need him to be healthy if they are going to make a legitimate playoff run?
I'm a little concerned about his injury. When he got hurt, I thought it was a high ankle sprain. The people were trying to train me on TV, tell me, Chris, stop trying to act like you're a doctor and everything. But he got hurt. He hasn't been back for a couple weeks. A normal ankle sprain, you're back 7 to 10 days. High ankle sprain, you need 3 to 4 weeks. Wide receivers and running backs, it affects them the most on the offensive side. So I like the productivity they had last week. It would be nice to be able to utilize Connor coming down the stretch. He could be utilized in the lineup, a spot duty against the Saints. But I'm going to be very, very careful because I like Samuel. I like what he brought to the party, and I'm going to give him 15 carries this week against the Saints.
Yeah, I think the other thing you have to worry about, you're going to the Saints, you're on that turf, you have an ankle sprain, that just doesn't give like grass gives. So now all of a sudden with that high ankle sprain, if it is in fact a high ankle sprain, you catch it on the turf, you catch your toe, we've all had them. And they are some of the, I've had several high ankle sprains. It feels like when you catch your toe, like you have broken your leg. That's how bad they hurt. And, you know, for a position like me, I just shoot my leg up. And
so you don't have to really feel your leg.
Right, but I don't have, you know, I have no feeling in my foot, but I can play that way because I'm playing in a phone booth. Mm-hmm. Like, you can't do that as a running back. So on the turf scares me a little bit. If it was at home on the grass, I'd be less concerned about him playing, maybe getting 15 reps, than I would be on the turf in New Orleans.
I like it. Public service announcement.
Yeah.
Grass is better than turf.
Yes.
Yeah, it is.
That's enough. Thanks.
We'll leave it at that. Tough guy. Coming up, Jerry Jones.
I live in Colorado.
Says he's concerned about the Cowboys. Should he be? That's next on First Things First. Coming up on New Year's Eve, it's the Red Box Bowl kicking off between Oregon and Michigan State at 2:30 Eastern on Fox. Then flip over to FS1 as number 17 Utah battles number 22 Northwestern. It's the San Diego County Credit Union Holiday Bowl at 6:30 Eastern, or catch it all on the Fox Sports app. Back here with Mark Solareth, and we are going viral. So we just talked about James Conner. He was named to his first Pro Bowl yesterday. His former college teammate Aaron Donald saw this coming a long time ago, with Conner posting a text he received from Donald after his cancer diagnosis in 2015, where Donald predicted that Conner would reach the Pro Bowl.
Oh, that's really cool.
Very, very cool. Very nice.
I didn't know about this relationship between these two guys. That's really cool. I guess it makes sense because they played in college together. I never put it together in my head. Aaron Donald Pitt when James Conner was there. Mm-hmm. That's really nice.
Yeah.
It's one of the best stories.
It's great.
All right, time for stories to start your morning. Brought to you by the unexpected energy of ExxonMobil. Last night, LeBron and the Lakers lost to the Nets. They end their four-game road trip 1-3. Nick Wright, you worried at all about the Lakers' road troubles?
Listen, they've been a below 500 team on the road. That in and of itself isn't concerning. The way they've played on the road, though, is the no-show against Washington on Sunday, never taking control of this game against Brooklyn, needing a late flurry to even have it be close at the end. That is concerning. We'll see how they play starting Friday when they're full strength.
I was concerned about their defensive point guard play. First game of the road trip, 50. Third game, 40. Last night, D'Angelo Russell, 22-13.
All right, on to the NFL now, where Pro Bowl rosters were released yesterday. Here we go. Pat Mahomes and Drew Brees were named the starting quarterbacks. See if Brees and Mahomes been the best quarterbacks in their conferences.
Yeah, I mean, who else? Who else would be better than them? Phillip Rivers, we can talk to him about Patty Mahomes, but it's nice. He's having a nice season. It's a good story. But Patty Mahomes is having the historic type of season that we see a guy that's going to be the MVP. Drew Brees, off to a tremendous start, has kind of come back to the pack as far as efficiency, yards, and touchdown. But he's had a tremendous season as far as his completion percentage and his team having that outstanding record that they do.
Patrick Mahomes is like a shortstop, man. Any arm angle you need to throw it from, I can throw it accurately across the diamond, hit my first baseman, and then his ability to manipulate defense with his eyes as a young quarterback. I wasn't sold coming out. I thought, okay, he'll have his struggles. You know what? You got me. Good for you, because you have been absolutely phenomenal, as has Drew Brees. But Patty Mahomes, unbelievable what he's done.
All right, sticking with the Pro Bowl, the Chargers lead the NFL with 7 selections. Here we go. Phillip Rivers, Mike Pouncey, Melvin Ingram, Melvin Gordon, Keenan Allen, Derwin James, and Adrian Phillips all headed to Orlando. Nick, are the Chargers the most complete team in the NFL?
Now that they have Joey Bosa back, they're making the strongest case for it, because they can beat you so many different ways. You mentioned their quarterback, their number one wide receiver, and their running back all make the Pro Bowl. And then guys at each level of their defense make the Pro Bowl. I'm happy Derwin James, even as a rookie, got his just due. Some other rookies I thought got left out that should have been there. Derwin's been spectacular playing both safety spots for them. Yeah, I mean, they are as the most well-rounded team in the league right now.
Yeah, very, very talented and well coached. 11 wins. New Orleans, only team that has more than that. They deserved getting that number of players in the Pro Bowl.
All right, finally, news out of Carolina. On Monday, after losing to the Saints, Cam Newton went into great detail about his injured shoulder. The assumption was that he's been hampered by it for weeks now. But yesterday, his head coach, Ron Rivera, said he still plans to start Cam unless told otherwise by the medical staff. Stink, you're calling the Panthers game this Sunday. What do you make of all this?
Well, I mean, there's no question when you watch Cam Newton, and Chris and I got to see him up close and personal in Cleveland, when you watch him, he's hampered. When you watch him, he's injured. The thing about playing in the National Football League, once you step on the football field, injuries aren't an excuse. You got to play well. He hasn't played well enough down the stretch. There's no question that it's not an excuse. There's a reason he hasn't played well. And that's because his shoulder is messed up. And you can see him labor at times. You can see him change his mechanics at times. There are a few throws a game, maybe 5 or 6 throws a game, and most of them are in critical situations because it's under duress. You've got to make it. It's a third down and long. You've got to make a throw where you can see all his mechanics change. And it comes out of his hand, and it just looks ugly.
So why not shut him down?
Well, you still have the hope of somehow miraculously finding your way into the playoffs. I don't think it's going to happen. I think here's the deal. You're going to play him because you still have the hope of making the playoffs. And then what's Heinicke is your backup quarterback right now?
Here's my concern. Is in 2016, he was dealing with a shoulder issue, not as significant.
Right.
And in week 17, they didn't have any hope of making the playoffs. Mm-hmm. And Ron Rivera talked about how he had talked to Cam wanting to shut him down. Cam basically fought his way into the lineup and played that entire game. I don't think it's just that they have the hope. I think it's that they are potentially leaving too much of this up to the player. Here's the hope for the Panthers. They go 2-0, the Vikings don't win again, the Eagles don't win again, and then Washington doesn't win again. That scenario, then they get in. Almost any other scenario, they're out. So they do have, I think it's like less than a 2% chance of making the playoffs.
Right.
So I don't think it can be just, our season's still alive. I would like to think, even with a strong-willed franchise quarterback, that at some point it's up to the organization to take the decision out of his hands.
Sure.
And if you're risking potential long-term damage or even further damage, or just not getting a head start on recuperation, the 2018 season is a lost one for Carolina. I would start working on 2019 as soon as possible.
Here's the problem, though. The medical advice you get in the National Football League is you can't do any further damage by playing with it, which is baloney. Because what ends up happening to you when you play on injured joints like he's playing on, there's a certain amount of degenerative change that takes place by playing that way. And you can have it operated on and you can have it cleaned up, but it's forever altered. That's the issue that you have. So I'm 100% with you, but you know the advice.
So you're with him as far as shut the player down.
I think the organization, if you're going to go that direction, the organization, because the players are going to play. Okay. Players want to play. If you're the organization,
yeah, because I'm getting ready to ask Stink, the announcer, who gave that I'm with Nick Wright answer compared to Stink, the player. Because I know they're
Stink
different. I know they're different.
No, I'm playing because I will play.
Why are you playing?
Because that's what I do. I'm a football player.
Okay.
I play regardless.
And what else? And what about your accountability to your team?
Absolutely.
Are you not playing because you've been next to a bunch of guys who've been playing injured, and you know they're injured, and you know you're not better than them, and you don't want the organization to set you apart from them, right? That's one of the reasons why we keep playing.
100%. But he's the future of your organization, and if you're the team decides that, hey, this is hurting our organization, you have to be the one to take his helmet and shoulder pads away.
Stink the play. player and Cam the player are on the same page. Cam wants to play.
Yeah.
I'm saying
Cam should be playing.
And Cam obviously wants to play. And like Ron Rivera talked about how Cam fought his way to play in 2016.
I'm talking about
the organization taking the decision out of his hands.
Right.
I'm not saying the Cam's saying
so that's the only way that you can get him
off
the field.
That's easier said than
right.
Me.
No organization has taken me.
Right. The reason why my shoulder is bad now is because I played 2 years with the shoulder, and the reason why has nothing to do with the team.
But do you regret it?
No, I don't regret it because the commitment my teammates made to me. You know how many times Randall McDaniel was out there playing with bad issues, John Randall playing with issues out there? Do you think they were sitting around saying, hey, man, pull the plug on my season? No, it's about the commitment you make to that team. If you can be out there and the team's got a chance to be able to win, you should be out there for your brothers. Forget the organization.
Hey,
the organization is never going to do anything to benefit you. So now I'm not going to give them control over my career because you know what? If we were in the playoff hunt, you know what, with the same injury, what they'd be telling me? Oh, no, you're okay. You can't do any more damage. We'll deal with it in the offseason. So you know what? The whole time, I'm in control of my career, and it's based on my teammates and the commitment that they have made to me. If I can be out there, then I'm going to be out there to help support my teammates. No organization is pulling the plug on me, and I've been in this predicament. I came back from a broken collarbone. I missed the last four games of the season. Why? To play against this guy in the Washington Redskins. Did you guys not win a Super Bowl championship that year?
Yeah.
Yes. And we put them in a dogfight in the wild card game, and I did that. Why? Because for my teammates. Because that is the commitment when you sign up to play football in the NFL. That's the commitment that you have made.
And it goes, I mean, it goes beyond it. And I agree with you. If they're going to shut them down, the organization has to shut them down. And as a player, you're just going to play. And I'll never forget Rod Smith, the greatest receiver ever to play in the Denver Broncos organization. I had a scope on my knee on Monday morning. I had literally had blood trickling out of both, all four holes that were in my knee, as I put on my knee sleeve to go out and practice on Friday afternoon. And Rod Smith had the day off because his hamstring was tight. And he comes from the training room and he sees me putting on my knee sleeve. He's like, what are you doing? I'm getting ready to go to practice. It's like, son of a gun. Then he started getting sad. I go, what? He goes, well, man, I can't take a day off with a hammy. Like, if you're going to go out and practice like that, I can't take a day off
with
a hammy.
One of my favorite quotes is Pat Riley. Pat Riley once came into a locker room in the NBA, and the guy was injured, and he asked him, if this was the playoffs, could you play 10 minutes? Guy was like, oh, yeah, absolutely. He said, oh, okay. Then he came back. He said, if this was late in the regular season, we need to clinch a game to get into the playoffs. Could you play 10 or 15 minutes? He said, yeah, I think. He said, get your ass dressed. All right? So for me, if I can play based on the commitment that I've made, forget the organization, forget my contract, that commitment is what makes sports and it's what makes locker rooms so special.
And you know what? And it's why, believe it or not, and this is going to sound really arrogant, most people haven't been blessed with the ability to play.
Mm-hmm.
But you know what keeps more people out than not having
it's
the athletic ability? Is exactly what we're talking about. I will tell you this, though. Think about it now. Can Tyler Heinicke, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, what offense can he run? Like you're talking about a completely different style of human being. Now he throws the ball nice.
Yeah, he's got
but
nice
you know he is not 6'5", 255.
Agreed on all of these points, but I don't. The point that I think is being missed is everything you're saying is true. But if the coach says you are shut down, no matter what you want, you can't force. You have to listen to the coach. You can't say no. I'm not. Like, that is the premise of all of pro sports is, even if you disagree with the coach,
it's not the premise. The coach is not going to come to you and be able to shut you down. The coach is going to have some respect if you can do your job or not. Do you think you can do your job, Chris? I think I can do my job effective enough that I'm not going to make the team worse. I'm not going to jeopardize that. So there is a partnership. I got the talent. I'm submitting my talent to you, but you're not going to tell me what to do, the organization nor the coach. We can have a conversation about it, and that's about it. We can have a conversation. Ultimately, can they pull the plug on you? Yeah, but I go down kicking and screaming because I'm built to play this game. There's only a few people built to do it, and Cam Newton happens to be fortunate enough. He's been playing since week number 11. Go back and look at the Pittsburgh hit. T.J. Watt hit him right on his shoulder, yep. And ever since then, the guy's been different. But I understand what Cam is doing. That's what leadership is about. And it's only a few people who really know what real leadership is about. And what Cam Newton, he's trying to lead the right way.
All right, it's a great conversation. Let's move on to the Saints, though. Despite three subpar performances, they are still in the driver's seat in the NFC, and while we usually credit their wins and blame their losses on that high-powered offense, it is time to give that defense some attention. Over the last 6 weeks, the Saints are allowing the fewest points per game in the NFL. Also, they forced 14 turnovers. That is tied for most in the league, along with the Bears, over that stretch. Stank, what has led to the Saints' impressive turnaround on defense this season?
Well, I mean, first off, Sheldon Rankins is absolutely destroying people in the middle of the football field. So you look at all three levels. So inside, now, we know that they've had great production out of Cameron Jordan. He's been great, right? Rankins is playing unbelievable football from a three-technique defensive tackle. So now you have DeMario Davis, who's playing great at the second level. The guy is absolutely destroying people.
Yes.
And now their cornerback play. Once they got Eli Apple, and I'm telling you, Eli Apple, and I did a game with the Giants last year. He was a pariah in that locker room. They couldn't stand him. He wasn't playing well. He gets to New Orleans. They coach him up. They put him in press man. And he's a different player. He is playing great football on the back end for them at the cornerback position. So all of a sudden, all three levels are starting to play really, you know, synced together football. And I think a big part of that is Eli Apple coming over to New Orleans, and he's playing really good football.
Eli Apple, he's very, very fortunate, the Saints, because Sean Payton, Mickey Loomis, they have something. And there's organizations like this. And the reason why I know it, because it's my school. They love Ohio State players. They love how they're taught football. They love how they're strictly about football. And they understand the business of it. They've played in a lot of big games. Eli Apple, what they tried to do was put him in an environment where he was very, very friendly. So they have five or six other Buckeyes that they have on the team. They have Michael Thomas. They got Teddy Ginn, Von Bell, Marshawn Lattimore, Kurt Coleman. Kurt Coleman, Marshawn Lattimore starting in that secondary. Von Bell starting in that secondary as a nickel or a dime safety. So he's playing a defense he's familiar with. He's playing with a bunch of guys that have confidence in him because they didn't see that year and a half in New York. They didn't see him getting beat. So they've restored a lot of confidence in him. He's playing a technique that he's very familiar. Now, he's not out of the woods. He will still give up a big play, but he provides speed to that defense, and he's a better tackler than what they've had out there on the defense. So that friendly environment, and Sean Payton has tried to create an atmosphere a lot like Pete Carroll, where it's very competitive in practices. So I thought this New Orleans defense, talking to Dennis Allen earlier in the season, he said we're off to a slow start like last year, but I believe we're more talented than we have been, and this secondary will come around. So they have played outstanding defense, but the Eli Apple trade reclamation project has paid them huge, huge dividends. Yes. And if they keep that number one seed, they're going to look back on that. When teams were giving up on the season, like Green Bay, and letting assets go, the Saints were in win right now mode.
And they acquired a guy that was a blue chip talent coming out of Ohio State at a relatively speaking dirt cheap cost. Knowing
like a fourth and a seventh or something like that.
Absolutely. Knowing that if we can get him back to where he was before the entire Giants secondary seemingly turned on him, he made some kind of out-of-line comments himself. Like, we know what the talent is. But it also should be noted what a critical time this Saints defense has been coming through for them. But pre-Teron Armstead's injury, the first 10 weeks of the season, the Saints had a top-five offense across the board. Since Teron Armstead's injury, this will surprise people, they've had a bottom-five offense. But that's when they've now had a top-five defense. Like, it's been the perfect transition from a team that was relying the first two-thirds of the season exclusively on their offense to this last third of the season where the defense has been carrying them. If they sink it up in the playoffs with needing just one win to clinch the one seed, have everything go through New Orleans, then they become the heavy favorites to reach the Super Bowl out of the NFC.
All right, Mark, stick around. Got to take a break. Coming up, is Jerry Jones concerned about the Cowboys? He'll tell you next time. Back here with Mark Schlereth. We're talking the Cowboys, coming off a shutout loss to the Colts, a loss Ezekiel Elliott said the team actually needed in order for them to regain focus. Meanwhile, the team's owner, however, slightly less optimistic. Jerry Jones's cup clearly half empty. Here's what he had to say about the team's first shutout loss since 2003.
We are concerned. We should be concerned. Parity is really here in the NFL. There's a lot of competitive teams that have a chance here. And we've got to realize that any team can beat you. They pay their guys, too, when you play them. And they're paid to beat you. And you go out there and give them an opportunity and line it up for them, it can happen to you.
All right, Stink, is Jerry Jones right to be worried, to be concerned about this team?
Oh, he's definitely right. They pay their guys, too.
Yes, absolutely. They pay the other guys on the field. Yeah, sure, you've got to be concerned. I mean, I think you have to look at several factors here. The way that team has been built was to dominate the line of scrimmage, run the football, open up your play action, just ask Dak not to turn the ball over. That's kind of how they're constructed, if you will. And you look at even the course of the last few weeks. I mean, Tyron Smith has had injuries. Suofilo had the eye poke. He missed time. You lost Travis Frederick for the season. Right, last week, Zach Martin didn't play. I mean, what you've built your team around. Now, I don't think the Dallas Cowboys are the best offensive line in football. They're just not that anymore.
Right.
But they're still formidable. They're still pretty good when they're together and when they're relatively healthy. And that's how you've built your team. And you know what? That wasn't them last week. And so that is a concern for me going forward, because you're built a certain way and you've got to adhere to that identity. But when you have injury issues, it's hard to, you know, it's hard to have that happen for you. So, yeah, should you be concerned? Absolutely. Anytime you can't produce as an offense, and then you couple that with you've given up, what, just about more sacks than anybody in football?
Second most sacks of anybody in football.
In the 50s, right?
51. Dak's been sacked 51 times.
And,
it's ridiculous.
And part of that, obviously, is the lack of continuity up front. Part of that is, you know, Dak holding onto the ball.
Yep.
Part of that was early in the season, receivers not beating one-on-one coverage. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's it stacks. It's like building blocks. You know, there's reasons that all these things happen. But you know how you're built, how you're constructed, and when that breaks down, you're a meager offense. You're a pretty average offense when you don't adhere to the principles that you've built your team around.
Well, and the other reason, of course, there's reason for concern for the Cowboys, is now the evaluations are different. It's no longer can you get into the playoffs. It's okay, we know who's going to be in the playoffs. How good are you compared to them? So during this winning streak, almost every game you played, it's like, oh, we've got, at the very least, the best defense. Well, in the playoffs, you're not going to have the best defense. The Bears' defense is clearly better. The Vikings' defense has the ability to be better if they play at their best. All right, so in this
and
winning...
the Saints' defense is playing.
The Saints' defense, right, in the last month and a half is playing at least as well. It's like, okay, so when we get to the playoffs, oh, we're definitely going to have the worst passing attack. Isn't it not Washington and Mark Sanchez and Josh Johnson coming in here? So when you are just... when you're 3-5, and you're clawing to get into the playoffs, there's one level of evaluation. But now that we know they're going to win the NFC East, the level of evaluation is how do they stack up against the Saints, Bears, Rams, Seahawks, and most likely Vikings? And the reality is, on a neutral field, the Cowboys are a slight underdog against Seattle, a slight underdog against Minnesota, I believe, and a significant underdog against those other three teams. And because what those teams don't have that the Cowboys do is the one glaring weakness, which is not just the passing game and giving up the sacks, but as you mentioned earlier, Jenna, this team, indefensibly, in my mind, given the fact that they have Ezekiel Elliott, is the second worst red zone offense in football. Like, a lot of that is what we saw last week. End up going for it on fourth down, fourth and goal, and getting stuffed. Having a guy on third and one from the four throwing a pass to your backup fullback and having him just drop the ball. Like, their red zone play calling and their red zone execution, has, the only team that's been worse than this year is the Niners, who are on their third quarterback. That's problematic for them.
How do you get better in the red zone this late into the season? You're not changing your personnel. Is it schematic?
You definitely have to change something from a scheme standpoint. What I like about the red zone, and scored a lot of touchdowns in the red zone, made a lot of my career third down in the red zone. The reason why is because I could predict what coverage you're going to get based on formation. They don't do that in Dallas. So they're two playmakers, Ezekiel Elliott. How can they help him out? How can they help out Amari Cooper? Well, you're defending less territory. So in the passing game, there's the deep passing game, intermediate, and short. The deep passing game is gone. You can very seldom throw to the deep quadrants of the field, especially the middle. So maybe the back pylon you might be able to go to on the left and or the right. But the field is so much smaller, so much more condensed, teams are less apt to blitz you in the red zone because they don't have to. They're going to play everything in front of you, force you to kick a field goal, or force you into a turnover. So you have to understand, how can I dictate to them? Ezekiel Elliott, maybe utilize him in the screen game, all right, on first down. You cannot run Ezekiel Elliott between the tackles on first and or second down in the red zone because that's what they're expecting. Get you an obvious third down situation. They can put a little pressure on you and get you off the field, force a field goal. So for me, that's what I'm going to do. If I do get in the red zone, I'm going to throw the ball to Zeke and Amari Cooper on first down. And because that is not real, real accurate and does not have a great arm, they don't throw outs, deep outs or short outs, because it's a dangerous throw.
Go the
quarterbacks
other way.
And coordinators got trepidation in having their quarterback throw. That's why when you see a young quarterback come from college to the pro, what do they make him do? Hey, let me see you throw that deep out. Watch all the big games in the NFL. Watch how many balls they throw to on the sideline late in game. So if they were able to add that, Amari, the reason why Philadelphia was unfortunate, they were inside. They knew they were going to run an in-breaking route. If Dallas had an out-breaking route, that guy would have tore his ACL trying to get out to Amari Cooper because he was already inside. So that's what I would do. Try to get Zeke in the passing game in the red zone, especially in the screen game. Amari Cooper, you got to get him some outbreaking things, and you got to trust Dak right. to be able to deliver.
I think you have to understand, to be a great red zone team, I believe you have to understand how to run the ball against heavy boxes and heavy fronts. And think about in the field of play. Most teams are playing some type of eight-man front. So they're playing either a cover three or a cover one.
Yeah.
Safety's up in there. You've got eight guys you have to contend with. Well, you can essentially play eight and nine man fronts from a too high look in the red zone because your heels of your safeties are at about 7 yards, not 12 yards where they are in the field. So
great point.
Your ability to close as a safety, I mean, you're really just playing a couple yards behind the linebackers in that, because you're not worried, as Chris said, you're not worried about the deep quadrants of the field because you've got the end line as an extra defender. So that's why it's hard. When you get into the red zone, you have to be able to dictate in the running game, and you have to be able to run against the eight-man fronts, and you have to be able to run against those. But you know what you got to do? You got to have one of those. That can beat one on.
Absolutely.
You
got to
have one
have
of those. That can. You got to have a dude that can beat one on one. That can use his body to body a dude up to get outside to a little whip route, whatever it is, or a
Cole
fade.
Beasley hurts you,
right.
And that's where not having a tight end. I know the last couple of weeks they've targeted the tight end, but man, if you have a tight end, those safeties got to get back, and those linebackers, you can throw it right over their head.
Right.
That's what they're
especially
fearful.
In the middle of the field, because
yes.
when you get down to the red zone, you're getting too high safety
and they can't
the
hit
majority
him in
of time. So you got to get right into the middle of that football field over the top of a linebacker.
And where you scored, I'm going to say, probably 30 to 40 of your career touchdowns, where it was one-on-one.
Yeah,
and
you're not good at stats, so probably more than that.
Hold on, well, you don't even know the qualifications I'm going to give. We're one-on-one in the red zone where they threw it up and they trusted
yes.
you to jump up and grab
right.
it.
There is no
That's
doubt.
Not what Amari's
yeah.
great at.
I think there's not a receiver in the history of football scored more touchdowns than me inside the 10-yard line.
Right. No, that is an accurate stat. That is, your stats are good.
Oh,
that is correct.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
So
how many touchdowns you score. You probably don't even know.
I scored 131. Hold on a second.
Are you kidding?
Wait a second.
Oh, yes, I am
kidding. Because you've been as high as on Amari as anybody. But that's not what he's great at. Jump balls, 50-50 balls,
yes.
right? That is not his specific skill set.
No.
So that is something that works against them, even having added him. Another thing that works against them, bringing it back to your point, is the sacks. Last year in the NFL, if you took a sack in the red zone, you scored a touchdown less than 10% of the time.
Right.
So if you give up a sack at any point, once you get in there, you're playing for three. Like, because you're, especially if you don't have a great quarterback, you're afraid to have him on third and goal from the 13, fire it into the end zone. You know what you're doing. You're throwing it short, hoping a guy can make somebody miss.
Yeah,
Cole Beasley ain't making anybody miss.
Right.
Like, and so
two
that's
years
been
ago,
killing them.
Where they were great in the red zone is they were running that zone read. Dak was on the
Ooh,
edge. They have
yes.
got to get back to doing that. And you know what? I understand, protect yourself, but Dak has to become a threat in the running game, and they did that a lot 2 years ago. They have curtailed that to some degree. They need to bring that back to bolster their red zone issues.
Great point.
lot to do, and they've got two games to do it before the playoffs start, so hurry up. Sting, thanks for hanging with us today.
Absolutely, a pleasure.
How many surgeries have you had?
Just 29.
Come on. Right.
How many Super Bowls you had?
Just three.
Do you ever forget those?
No.
Oh, okay.
Thank you for listening to the First Things First podcast. Remember, leave us a review and tell us what you think. Subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts and catch us on FS1 Monday through Friday, 6:30 a.m. Eastern. For Chris Carter and Nick Wright, I'm Jenna Wolf. So long, everybody.